Okay, we're starting here on the bottom of Tet Zayin Amud Bet by the two dots. The Gemara says, "Amar Rabbi Yubo, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, a motzei shtar chov b'shuk, someone who finds a document of indebtedness in the shuk, afal pi shekatuv bo henpek, even though it has a validation by the Beit Din, lo yachziro the balim. You can't give it back to the balim. So lo mi bayehi de lo katuv bo henpek, in a situation in which it has not been validated by Beit Din, there for sure you don't give it back." Because we're afraid of the fact that the document was drawn up in order to borrow the money, but he never actually executed on it and never borrowed the money. And what is that? That's a case where you have a shtar mikuyam. But once you have a validation of Beit Din in there, which means Beit Din checked out the edim, checked out the validity of the document, you have to assume that the loan was actually extended then, because otherwise Beit Din wouldn't have validated the document. Lo yachzir. And therefore, even though it has a handbag in it, you still don't give it back. The chayshin on the pir own. Because we do worry about the fact that there's a possibility that it was repaid. So you have two parts here. One part is if shtar is not validated, then you have a risk that the shtar was drawn up without any loan actually being extended. If they already have the validation of Beit Din, so that eliminates the possibility that the loan wasn't taken out, because the validation shows that the contract was in effect at some point, then we worry about the possibility of Chayshin Lepiron, that the Lova actually paid back the debt. Right, this is arguing on Shmuel. Amar Shmuel was the two dots before. Moshe Shtarakna Bashuk, Yechziru Lebalim, only Shtarakna, because Lo Chayshin Lepiron. Rabbi Yochanan's position here is against Shmuel's position before, who says that we are not Chosheish Lepiron, for exactly the reason that you're saying, which is that we assume that the person ripped up the Shtar. Yochanan, on the other hand, believes that that's not the case, and therefore we do worry about the possibilities of Piron. Eidvei Rabbi Yirmiel Rabbi Bahu, Ko Maseh Beit Din, Hari Zeh Yachzir. Don't we have a statement that anything that is done in Beit Din, meaning that it has Beit Din's involvement in it, then we give it back to the Malveh in that case. So, Amalei Yirmiel Bri, Lo Ko Maseh Beit Din Shavin. Not all actions of Beit Din carry the same type of weight with them. Ella could go into Muchzak Kafran, in a case where he's already Muchzak as someone who denies the fact that he has paid back. So then he loses his believability in that case in order to say Parati, that I have paid it back already. So not every time do you have a Beit Din action do you find a situation in which that automatically means that the contract is valid and you can give it back to the creditor. There are times when it's valid, sometimes it's not valid. Here we have a situation in which the debtor has already established a reputation or a precedent that he denies having borrowed it, or he claims he's paid it, even though we've proven it otherwise. In that case, you don't have to worry about Piron anymore. Chayshin on the Piron is no longer an issue because this person has no nemanut, has no believability with regards to this situation. Just because a person was Huxak Kafran one time, that means he no longer pays forever? Meaning that, why do you assume that this person, because in a certain circumstance or situation, denied the fact that he paid it back, does that then sully his reputation for the rest of his life? He's not able to then ever make a claim of parati? Obviously that has implications, because then anytime there's a claim against him, we have a situation in which we don't believe him. And then people will bring claims against him just because of the fact that he's not believed. So Rava says that you can't just say because he has set a precedent that that's automatically the case here. And therefore, El Amar Rava, Rava brings the same answer that we brought before. Matritin b'shtar chalta'ata v'adrachto. That before they wanted to bring this as a proof to Shmuel's position, and then we rejected it as a proof to Shmuel's position because Rabbi Zeira suggested before, when he said that this was not a proof to Shmuel's position, we can explain this right on the same matter, which is that we're talking about shtarot Beit Din that have nothing to do with parati, which is you have a shtar chalta ata, which is where you ever have a foreclosure document, which already states that this particular property is being seized on behalf of the creditor. Beit Din's assessed the property and they determine that this is the value that the creditor is entitled to, and they give him a document allowing him to foreclose on the property. And a shtar drachto is a shtar which allows him to find assets that the debtor has anywhere that they may be. Right now the debtor has no assets. So they give him a drachta, which gives him the right to find assets and seize those assets wherever he can find them. So Rashi explained above what the meaning of the words chalta'ata and drachta. Drachta, he said, means to walk around, to go somewhere. And that's because he's got to search for the assets. Chalta'ata, I would suggest, comes from the word lachlot, which is to boil, put in hot water, which means to solidify the situation. So also there, shkal chaltato is where you have a solid foreclosure on a particular property, and those are shtarot from beitin. Over there, there's no reason to believe parati. As Rashi noted before, that once the guy got this far, and he didn't pay back the amount, and now beitin had to go as far as to foreclose on his property, then we're not going to believe him all of a sudden to say parati, I paid it back. And it's a little late for him to come into and say, parati, I paid it back, and Beit Din's already foreclosing on his property. So there he would have to bring evidence to the fact that he paid it back, rather than just simply saying, parati. I mean, even Rabbi Yochanan, or those that disagree with Shmuel, like Abaye, Rabbi Yochanan, who disagree with Shmuel, they would agree here that Ein Cheshin and the Piron, because we're too far along in the process. And again, yesterday, the Gemara discussed, at what threshold do we say no, the person's no longer believed to say parati? I mean, how far along in the process of foreclosing do you have to be in order to say it's done now? The loveh loses el nemanut. The debtor no longer has nemanut there because he should have dealt with it at this point. Once we're this far into the beit din process, now the burden of proof is on him. The kafran, hova atali yadon, says, well, while we're on the topic of kafran, then nema be milta. Let us say something about kafran, meaning that you suggested that the answer to this problem was chukzak kafran. Rava rejected that. It says, while we're on the topic, let's at least discuss something about Kafran. They said to this individual, say, tain lo. Beit Din said to him, go give it. They give a verdict that he is chayav to pay in this case. Vamar parati. And then he goes in and he says, I paid it back. Ne'eman. He is believed in that case. Ba malve lichtov ein kotvim. So if the malve comes in that case and wants them to write a shtar, a drachta for him, a foreclosure document on his behalf, ein kotzvim v'notzim lo. We do not write it for him and give it to him, in that we believe the lova in this case that he said parati. Chayav atali tein lo. On the other hand, if they say you are obligated to pay him, v'amar parati, and then he says, I paid it back, einu ne'eman. In that case, he's not believed. So in the first case, the Beit Din came to a final verdict and a psak halacha, and he says, parati, he is neman in that case, because in general, people listen to Beit Din, and in listening to Beit Din gave them a final psak, and therefore he is believed. When he says parati, it makes sense that he followed the verdict of Beit Din and he paid it. And Rashi says, oh, you're neman b'shvut eseit. It's a case here where you got a final verdict from Beit Din. They say you got to pay. This is the conclusion of the proceedings here. You've got to pay. And they give a verdict to that effect. And then later on, the creditor brings him to Beit Din and says, the guy didn't pay me. And he says, parati, I did pay it back. Over there he's neman. Rashi says, with the shvut eseit. He has to take a shvut eseit because he's denying, say, kofer bakol in a sense. But he has nemanut because it makes sense that a person will listen to the Beit Din when they give a finalized verdict. And also the malve wants for it to write him a shtar drachta. We're not going to do that on his behalf because we assume that the lova actually paid in that case. Other than chayav atali tein lo, when Beit Din makes it as a suggestion, they don't have a verdict yet, but they say, look, you're going to be chayav to pay him. You should pay him. But they don't have a finalized verdict in that case. Ben amar parati, and he says, I paid it, einu ne'eman. He's not believed in that case. The reason being, as Rashi says, if he went this far to bring him to Beit Din and to have to go through a whole case, this guy is not paying until there's a final conclusion in Beit Din. Meaning that if he went this far in the case and he refused to pay until this point in time, why should we assume that he pays just because Beit Din says you have to pay? He's not going to pay until there's a verdict over here. This guy makes it clear to everyone, the way that he's functioning over here is that he wants a psak from Beit Din. He's not going to pay until there is a psak from Beit Din. So then, the enu ne'eman over here, as Rashi says, enu ne'eman li shava. He doesn't have a right to take a shvua in that case. Therefore, el shkenegdo nishba benotel. We flip the shvua to the other party, and he takes the shvua and collects because this person doesn't have an nemanut, as Rashi says. Keiven de mitchilato hutzrach l'tov oludin. The fact that the creditor had to bring him to court, ain darko l'maher lifroa. He's not going to pay this back, ad shif seku dino psak gamur, until Beit Din comes to a finalized verdict. So in the case of the finalized verdict, then we do believe him to say he parati. But in a case where there's no finalized verdict, Beit Din just says to him, I think you need to pay him, then that's not enough for this guy. This guy went this far, he's not doing anything until he gets a final psak from Beit Din. And therefore also, if the malva comes and he asks for a shtar drachta to be written on his behalf, then we give it to him and we do write it on his behalf. So again, the loveh has a time period in which he's believed, if we assume that he believed he was really chayav, obligated on pi Beit Din, then we assume that he followed the instructions of Beit Din. In a case where it's just a strong suggestion of Beit Din, but not a psak of Beit Din, then we don't assume that he followed the instructions of Beit Din, because he had refused to pay until now. He's going to wait until there is a finalized verdict. Rav Zvid, Mishmeder Rav Nachman Amar, Ben Tzein Tein Lo, Ben Chayev Atali Tein Lo, Vamar Parati Ne'eman. He disagrees with this statement of Rav Nachman and says that there is no such distinction. Ba Malve Lichtov, Ein Kodvim Venotnim Lo. And if the Malve wants a Shtar Drachto, a foreclosure document, we will not give it to him. If you're going to make such a distinction between the verdict of Beit Din or a suggestion or a strong suggestion of Beit Din, this is the distinction to make. If they give him a finalized psak and say, go pay for it, va'amar parati. And he says, I already paid it. Ve'edim oto shelo paro. And then edim come along and say that you did not pay it back. Huchzak kafran loto mamon. He has lost all reliability with regards to this case. And we no longer believe him in this case, because we have edim showing that he didn't pay. It actually says the case is here. Bifaneinu tav'o lifro'alo. In front of us, the creditor asked him to pay al pi Beit Din v'lo paro, and he didn't pay it. Ho bifneihem he'iz lavor al pi Beit Din. Since in front of edim, he is willing to deny an act of Beit Din, deny a verdict of Beit Din. Inu men shum v'domar paratib shlo Beit Din. Then without edim, he has no right to make a claim. Meaning that he has no evidence of the fact that he paid it back. He's lost his reliability because in front of edim, he denied owing the money. So what happened here is the creditor, after a verdict of Beit Din, goes to claim the money from the debtor.
With edim.
With edim there. Right. And the guy denies it, doesn't pay it back, refuses to obey the sivoy of Beit Din, the verdict of Beit Din. So in that case, if he later comes up and says parati without edim, he's lost all ne'emanut, because he's already been enough of a mechutzaf to, in front of edim, say that, there's no verdict over here. I don't have to listen to the verdict of Beit Din, or I already dealt with this. There's nothing for me to do over here. So, but, in the case, chayav atali tein lo, in a case where Beit Din makes a strong suggestion that you are chayav, but has yet to come to a verdict, v'amar parati, and then again he says, I paid it back already, Beidim edim oto shelo para. Again, the same setup where the edim say that he did not pay it back. V'chazar v'amar parati. And then again, he comes back and says, I paid it back afterwards without edim. Lo huchzak kafran oto mamon. He does not lose his reliability with regards to this situation. My taima. What's the reason exactly what you asked? Ishtimutehu dekam ishtamet minei. He is trying to slip out of it. He's trying to buy himself time to pay it back. Savar ademainu be'rabonim bedinei. The Beit Din's going to have to look at the case again, or they didn't come to a verdict yet. I have more time. So if I deny it now, it'll buy me time to kill Beit Din actually gives the verdict. So the difference in the cases, according to the explanation here, according to Rav Zvid in the name of Rav Nachman, is that in a case where there's a finalized verdict of Beit Din, the denial of that verdict puts you in a position where you've lost all ne'emanut. Because even if you wanted to buy time, it's unacceptable to buy time against a verdict of Beit Din. It means that you're basically denying outright a verdict of Beit Din, and that's enough of a chutzpah that we tell you that you've lost your ne'emanut. On the other hand, if there's yet to be a verdict of Beit Din, even though Beit Din says you're going to be chayav in this case, in that case we believe that the denial is not necessarily a chutzpah vis-a-vis Beit Din, because there's no verdict yet. So he says, I'll wait for the verdict in this case. And so he's trying to buy himself time to pay it back, until the verdict of Beit Din, the finalized verdict of Beit Din. So in that case, we'll give him the benefit of the doubt, and therefore if he says parati, he has ne'emanut in that case. So now, I mean, Tosfot says, top Tosfot on the Omud, which is what we've explained until now, right? That's the difference between these two statements of Beit Din. One is a final verdict, one is a psak alocha, the other one seems to be a strong suggestion. Again, we had this in the Gemara in Baba Kama, where the Gemara made a similar distinction. And then the Gemara says, Kidami Gamar Din Ploni, Ploni Ata Chaya, Ploni Ata Zakai. So Vyeshamar, the Ata Mikre Gamar Din, Linyan Shasur Libtoa, Lifish Yodea, Lehechana Din Note. So it's not that it's a Gamar Din in the sense that it's the final psak of the Din, but it is far enough along when you say Chayava Tenli Tenlo, that you already have a sense of what the conclusion is going to be, And therefore, we don't allow you to compromise in that case anymore, because the Beit Din has already essentially come to a conclusion. It just hasn't written up the verdict. It hasn't given the finalized verdict. The Tosfot says that it's enough of a conclusion to say you can no longer arbitrate, because you know which way the case is going, and therefore the option of arbitration has now been taken away. Others, like the Ritva, suggest that there is no difference between these two statements, just in perception in people's mind that there's a difference between them. But both of them, like Tosfot, brings evidence of the fact that the word chayav also indicates a psak din, and the Ritva believes they're both piskei din and beit din. Just the perception of the individual of how he views it, as whether it's a really final psak or not a final psak, that influences how he'll react to them or the way that he'll handle the situation. All right. So now the other thing is that Tosfot notes over here in the bottom of the previous amud, shum de chusak kafran tulo para klal. Just because you're chusak kafran, you don't pay back anymore. Afal gav dermina lekaman. Even though we just said now chusak kafran no to mamon. When you make such a denial after a psak beit din, that you're considered to be a kafran for that money. Hacha nafal shiny. Over here, because the document fell out of the hands of the creditor, the mukhu milka meshum dachi lo haya nisa l'shomro l'fishu paro alove. The loveh has extra evidence or circumstantial evidence in his favor. So in a case like what we just read now, where he makes a denial, and then we have a deem saying that, listen, this guy denied owing the money after Beit Din gave a verdict, that person is chuksa kafran. He's already established a precedent of not being believed, and we don't believe him. Over here, where you have a maisa Beit Din, and there's a denial of parati, and he says, I already paid it back. There, he has additional evidence supporting his position, which is the fact that they found the shtar on the floor. If the malveh had really lent the money and it wasn't paid back, then he would have held on to the shtar. The fact that he wasn't careful about the shtar gives the loveh additional strength to his position that he can say parati. In this case, even though he's chuzak kafran, even though he's been chuzak kafran, the additional fact that the shtar is now lost gives him additional believability, even though in a normal circumstance we would not believe him. Because yes, chuzak kafran, he loses his nemanut in this case and he can't say parati. But in a case where he has other things backing up the fact that he was porea the chov, there we would give him the benefit of the doubt. So now next case. Amar Rabba Barchan, Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Mana libi adecha. I have 100 zuz with you. Valo meri in the chabi adiklum. The other guy says, you don't have anything with me. Ba'idim e'idim oto she'eshlo. And then we have edim that show up and say that you do have the money. That either he lent you the money or he deposited the money with you. V'chazar v'amar parati. And now after this point he says, you know what, I paid my back. So at first he denied that the loan existed or that the pikadon was with him. Then after the edim come along and say, yes, the whole transaction happened. Oh yeah, yeah, it did happen, but I paid it back already. There. So chazak kafran no to mamon. Here where he makes a complete denial of the case. And then after he's caught saying that, oh, the case really happened, then he changes his mind and says, I paid it back. There, huksak kafran oto mamon. He no longer has nemanut with regards to saying I paid it back, and he can't even take a shvuah to that effect. We'll have to flip the shvuah on the other party, because this person's already established a reputation of denial here, and therefore he loses his nemanut in this case. Ki'ad shabtai, braid the Rabbi Merninus. So they have Shabtai, the son of Rabbi Merninus. Katav la lekalate. He wrote to his daughter-in-law. Itztala de milta biktubata. He would obligated as part of the ktubah to provide her with a silk robe or some sort of garment, expensive garment that was included in the ktubah. Bikibla ale. And he accepted it as a guarantor. It's not clear here from what the case is that Shabtai, the son of Rabbi Merninus, was the one who was getting married. And they're saying that Rabbi Merninus' daughter-in-law was getting married to Shabtai, his son. And therefore, he was the one who owed it. And Rabbi Merninus was the guarantor. I think that seems less likely to be the case. The more likely case is here is that Shabtai is the father-in-law. His son, meaning the grandson of Rabbi Merninus, got married. And he, in the ketubah, promised this silk robe. And Shabtai, the son of Rabbi Merninus, was the guarantor, the father-in-law, the father of the chatan, was the guarantor to the ketubah. Makes more sense because the case here, it does not reflect very positively on the individual. So it's more likely that it's Rabbi Merninus' son than Rabbi Merninus himself. Because he is Rabbi Merninus, we wouldn't assume that he's the one who takes action like this or acts in this way. Irkas ketubata, the ketubah got lost or it was ripped up. Something happened to the ketubah that it's no longer extant. Amar la lo ayu dvarim olam. She comes to ask that the ketubah be rewritten or make a claim for the ketubah, and he says, never happened, no such thing existed, you never had this silk robe in the ketubah, you don't have any claim over here. Atusade, then witnesses show up, v'amre in katavla, he did write her that, and then it was in the ketubah. So losof amarlo pratia, and then he says, I paid it back. So if you want to see, this is the case from the previous situation, it's clear here that the first denial was a complete denial of the case, and then after he is proven to be false in that situation, he changes his mind and says, "Pratia, I paid it back." After the coming to Rabbi Chia, they came for Rabbi Chia. You have already established a precedent of denial with regards to this case, and therefore when you say Pratia, you no longer have Nemanut, because you denied the whole claim to start with. You don't get a second chance after you've denied the claim and been proven wrong to now say, "Oh, I paid it back." You no longer have Nemanut over here, you lose your Nemanut. Again, because of the negative nature of the case, that's why I would suggest that Shabtai was the father-in-law in the case, he was the guarantor, and he's the one denying the claim here, rather than Rabbi Merninus being the father-in-law and the Shabtai being the one who married the girl, because that would reflect very poorly on Rabbi Merninus. I'm Rabbi Avin, I'm Rabbi Elo, I'm Rabbi Yochanan. Haya chayav lechaveiro shvua. He owes his friend a shvua. We'll have to find out why he owes his friend a shvua. V'amar nishbati. And he says, I took the shvua. V'edim me'edim oto shelo nishpa. And the edim testified to the fact that he did not take a shvua. Now your question again is valid here. It's very easy for edim to testify that somebody did something. It's very hard for edim to testify that a person didn't do something, because in order to testify you didn't do something, you have to be with them all the time. So in this case, Rashi does the same thing he did before with regards to the edim saying you didn't pay him back, is where the person came and made a claim against him in front of the edim. He says, you owe me a shvuah, please take this shvuah in front of edim, and he denies the necessity to take the shvuah in front of the edim. So in that case, the edim can testify to the fact that he didn't take the shvuah, because when claimed, he refused to do it, or he says, I don't have to take a shvuah. So that's the nature of the testimony here. They're not coming and saying, we've been with you for the last 7 days, and you didn't take any shvuah. That's not the claim that they're making. Although there are rishonim, like the Ramban, who indicate that that is the case here, that the edim are stating the fact that he never paid it back. It's not a case where the creditor came and made a claim and he denied the claim, but really a case where edim are saying there was no such repayment made. Again, that's a much harder claim to bring evidence to that fact, because that would mean they'd have to be with him all the time or has some very personal knowledge about why it is that he never paid it back. Then, chukzak kafran otav shva. Then he loses nemanut for that shvu'ah, because here he denied having to take a shvu'ah. Then the edim come and testify and say that, wait a minute, your claim was brought against you, and you didn't take the shvu'ah. So now we have a problem with chuzak kafran. Basically, he is denied. He said he took the shvu'ah. Edim say you didn't take the shvu'ah. He's now chuzak kafran. He can't then after that fact say, I took the shvu'ah. He's not believed anymore. Amruah kameh de Rabbi Abou. They told this member of Rabbi Yochanan over to Rabbi Bo, Amarlo, Mistavram Miltu de Rabbi Avin. I think that Rabbi Avin is right, but in a qualified basis, which is, Shinitchayev Shvua beBeitin. That's only when the obligation stemmed from a Psak Beitin that he had to take a Shvua. Avachiev Atzmo Shvua, if he generated the obligation to take the Shvua himself, Ne'mad. He remains believed in this case. Why? Avininish de Mikrei v'Amar. People do such a thing. Now, the way Rashi explains Mikrei v'Amar is that people will, in certain situations, obligate themselves in a shvuah and then backpedal on that or deny the fact that they have to take a shvuah, because they figure until Beit Din forces me to take a shvuah, I don't really want to take a shvuah. Just because I said I would or I caused myself to have to take a shvuah, that's not enough of an impetus for the person to actually take the shvuah in the end. And therefore, when he denies it, he is either changing his mind, he's getting cold feet, he doesn't want to deal with it now. But if it's an act of Beit Din that demanded the Shvuah, and then he claims that he took the Shvuah, and the Edim come and say, you didn't take a Shvuah, that's already a chutzpah, that's already a denial of a Maisa Beit Din. There already he loses his Nemanut, his believability in that case, because he's taking an act that is an act against a verdict of Beit Din, and that means that he loses Nemanut. So that's, as Rashi explains over here, Avidish de Mikri v'Omar, lo eseh mashlo chiyuvuni beitin, ela ani batzmi. I'm not going to be held accountable for something that I got myself into rather than beitin's psak. Veinzu sarvanut v'charata el duchia ba'alma. That is not a refusal to obey the verdict of beitin. It's not a rejection of what was done before. El d'chia b'alma. He's just buying time until Beit Din goes, he goes to the court, and Beit Din demands a shvuah from him, or he believes that Beit Din won't deny the shvuah. But because he voluntarily got into a situation in which he has to give a shvuah or make a shvuah, the denial of that after the fact is not enough of a reason to say that he has no ne'manut, that he's not believed anymore. So even though he had volunteered to take the shvuah, that denial now was not enough to make him lo ne'man. All right, so now the Gemara says, Adrua kamei de Rabbi Avin. So after we had Rabbi Abbo's qualification, they took that back to Rabbi Avin. Amalu ananami beit din amrei. And he actually corroborated Rabbi Abbo's explanation of his statement and said, that's what I meant. When I said it, I meant only an action of beit din. In that case, he's not emman. Itmar nami, we have a similar memra. The Amar Rabbi Avin, Amar Rabbi Abba, Rabbi Yochanan. Haya chayav lechevero shua beit din. V'amai nishbati. And he said, I took it. As whether he has to take a shvuat heset because he's denying any claim over here to substantiate the fact that he took a shvuah is actually a machloket rishonim as to whether a shvuat heset is relevant over here, or maybe the nature of the shvuah that he took might influence of whether he has to take a shvuat heset. But at least that is discussed amongst the rishonim as to whether he should be or should not be taking a shvuat heset here to substantiate his claim. And the Edvim testified to the fact that he did not take such a shvuah. Then that person has lost ne'manut with regards to that shvuah. If he says he took it after that fact, we're not going to believe him. He has to have a dim to the fact that he took the shvuah. Otherwise, he's not ne'man because of the fact that he already denied in front of a dim the fact that Beit Din had obligated him a shvuah. So then later on, for him to come and say that I did take the shvuah with that dim, he doesn't have ne'manut in that case. We're seeing here from Rabbi Avin and Rabbi Yochanan is that this idea of chuksak kafran is not limited to monetary repayments or obligations, but also has to do with obligations of shvua in Beit Din. So anytime Beit Din obligates you to do something and you deny having the obligation to do it, you become chuksak kafran for whatever that action is, and you have no longer have ne'manut with that edim. Amar Rabasi and Rabbi Yochanan. Omadzei shtar chov b'shuk v'katov bo henpek. Rav Asi says in Rabbi Yochanan that if you find a shtar chov in the shuk and it has a validation of Beit Din, fikatov bo b'zmano. This is an additional factor. The statement we started with today's daf was Rabbi Bo and Rabbi Yochanan, when you find a shtar chov in the shuk that has a henpek in it. So that's what the case was over there. Don't give it back to the Balim. That was Rabbi Yochanan's statement over there because cheshina and the piron. The additional piece of information we have in this case is there was a henpek, there was a validation because of bo b'zmano. Bo Bayom. And it's dated. The contract's dated, and it's dated for today. The indebtedness was incurred today. The contract evidences the fact that he borrowed the money today. Yachziru the Balim. Then you can give it back to the Ma'uve. Imishum katav l'votu lo lavo. If you're worried about the fact that he thought about borrowing the money and didn't end up borrowing the money, hakatuv bo henpek. Beit Din already validated the document. That shows you that this is an outstanding loan because of the fact that it's already validated in Beit Din. So this is similar to what we said before in Rabbi Yochanan, which is once you have a validation of Beit Din, you know that the loan was extended. But then, imishum piron, which is the worry that we had before in Rabbi Bauer and Rabbi Yochanan's statement of paying back, lipriya bat yom alo chashina. Nobody pays back the loan the same day that they borrowed. It's an unreasonable assumption that the lover repaid the loan immediately. And as your Tamidi Rabbeinu Peretz point out, you'd also have to come to the conclusion that there is no knunya, the yom echad, that people don't collude just for one day, or over one day, or the Rashba suggests over here that for one day, if they were going to do a knunya, they'd rewrite the shtar, and they wouldn't bother to use a pre-used shtar, because they're already colluding, it's worth them to pay the money to get a new shtar. Although the Tamidi Rabbeinu Peretz seem more appealing, because in a case where it's a single day, it's unlikely that he's going to be Toref Lekucho twice on the same day. Seems a little bit far-fetched. The Amalei Reb Zer Rabbi Asi, Mi Amar Rabbi Yochanan Ochi. Did Rabbi Yochanan really say this? Ha'at Huda Amart Mishmei the Rabbi Yochanan. Didn't you say in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, Shtar Shalava Bo Uparo, a star that you borrowed with and then paid it back, Enu Chozer Velo Vebo. You're not allowed to go back and borrow money under that same document again. Shekvar Nimcho Shibudo. Because the lien was already wiped out. Which is that when the original document is drawn up, either according to Abaye, who quotes Rabbi Meir Shita, that Edav Bechotamav Zochin Lo, that the signature of the Edim generates the lien on the property, or whether you believe that it's once the money is borrowed, that generates the lien. In either situation, That's from the original document when it documents a loan. Once that loan is repaid, the shibo, the lien, is then wiped out. I mean, that's what happens when you repay your mortgage, right? They take away the lien. The lien is then wiped out once you've repaid the mortgage. But then if you use that same document to lend money again, you can't generate the lien again. That's the problem here. That document has no validity as far as the lien is concerned. Because if the lien is generated by the signature of the edim, or remember that, I always say this over and over again, but it's because of the nature of what happened in their day. There's no registry. There's no title company that can go and check whether this was actually registered. The only way to get the information is through publicity. And we say that a shtar has a kol because a edim signed on the shtar. So that's true if you're talking about the original loan. But if he keeps the document after he's already repaid the loan and lends money under the same document again, then where's the lien generated? There's no publicity about this loan. There's no publicity about the fact that it's taken out. It will be the equivalent of a milval peh, an oral loan that's extended, and you cannot collect from encumbered property at that point. Emat, what is the time scenario here? Ilema lemachar, if you say it's tomorrow, uli yom achara, my arya shekvar nimchol shibudo. If you're talking about tomorrow already, then why are you worried about the fact that the lien was forgiven? Typically, davele muktam. That's a problem of a shtar muktam, which is it's going to give you the right to collect from buyers of the property or people who were in front of you in line in terms of claims against this individual. It's actually going to push your lien back a day. Mitznan shtarei chova muktamim psulim. And the Mishnah in Shvi'it says that if you predate your shtarot, they are pasul because it gives you a right of collection, which is beyond the time period which you should be entitled to. If you lend money today and the dating on the contract is for 6 months ago, that means that when you come to collect on this loan, anybody who bought property in the last 6 months is going to be behind you in terms of a claim, which is wrong because you only lent the money after they had already purchased the property. So that would be pasul. So it must be the case of la biyome. It must be a case where it's on that day. Alma pare inesh biyome. People do pay back on the same day. That's the only reason he can recycle the contract. Is because he borrowed money, paid it back, and now wants to borrow money again. So you see, people do recycle the contracts. Sambalay, mi kamina dolo pare klau. I didn't say that nobody ever does it. Dolo shchicha inche de pare biome kamina. I said that statistically, that's not the case. So in a situation where we find a contract on the floor with the date today, we can assume that that contract was not repaid. Because the overwhelming majority of people will not pay back on the same day. So now if I'm trying to make a decision, what I should do with this contract, there's a henpeck in it, so it was validated in Beit Din. We know the loan was extended. It's today's date. In all likelihood, there was no repayment of the loan, so return it to the Malva. On the other hand, the case that you brought me is a case where we know he paid it back. Malva and the Malva agree that it was paid back, and then he tried to recycle the contract to use it again. In that case, we're not going to allow you to recycle the contract and lose it again because you lost your shibud, you lost the lien. I mean, you could do it, but you're just not going to get a lien. So there's two different situations here. One scenario is a scenario where we know for sure he paid it back. In that case, you can't say, oh, people don't pay it back. The person paid it back. Even though people normally don't, this is what that guy did. Once you're in that situation, then nimchal shibudo. The shibud is gone. But in a case where he has lost the contract and we don't know what happened, we're going to assume that he didn't pay it back. That's an unusual scenario. Rav Kana says, kishchayav modeh. In the case here, it's a case where the lovet agrees to the fact that he owes the money. So that's why we say that he is obligated to give it back to the Malvin. Iochi Maila Memra. What's the point? You're giving the contract. It's dated for today. It has a validation of Beit Din, and the Lova agrees that the loan is outstanding. What Havamina would you have not to give it back? The only Chashash you had was Piron, that it might have been paid back. We said, overwhelming evidence is people don't pay back on the same day. Now the Lova says he didn't pay it back. So now what question do you have about giving it back? Now the way I explained it is that Rav Kahana is a continuation of the previous Gemara. And it says, Chayav Modeh also includes that there was a henpeck in the shtar. And so all of those things together make it that there's nothing to be choshesh for. Which is the shita of the Rambam and the Rif. But others, like the Rashba, believe that Rav Kahana's statement is independent of what was said in the Gemara before. And it's not necessary, according to Rav Kahana, to have a henpeck in the shtar. It's enough that you have Chayav Modeh. The fact that the Loveh agrees that he owes the money, because the Lova's admission is sufficient evidence given the fact that it's dated for today. No, in essence, he did pay it back. So why is he saying that he didn't pay it back? Mishom de kabayi mahadu la mitzvah bay zimna achrita. He wants to use it again and borrow with the money. Pshita de safra chayish. And he wants to save the money for contract. He doesn't have to go back to the lawyers of the sofer to draw up a new contract. So he basically agrees to the creditor that I owe the money. Kamash malan, we don't worry about that. Dimkein malve gufe lo shava. Because the malve would not allow him to do this. Savar shame be rabbanon umafsidili. Because he says, I'm afraid the rabbanon are going to hear about what happened, and then they're going to deny me the ability to have a lien on the property. Since the document is invalid, the malve and the lova know it's invalid because the loan was paid back. Now they're recycling the contract. And both of them agree. Lova says I borrowed money, malve says I lent money, and the contract evidences that. So we would have thought that in that case, of course you should give it back. Because everybody agrees to the fact that it happens. We say, no, maybe they are recycling the contract over here. And recycling the contract means that there should be no lien. Why then do you allow to give it back? So Gemara says, allowed to give it back is because the malve, the creditor, would not allow this to happen. The creditor is the one who's going to lose here. Yeah, the lova saves a couple of pennies, but the malva loses everything, because if somebody gets wind of the fact that it was paid back and recycled, he'll lose the lien over here. So you won't allow that. Maishnam adetznan. How's that different than our Mishnah? Matzah shterichov. When you find a document of indebtedness, im yesh ben achrayut nechassim, if they have a lien in them, lo yachzir, don't give it back. V'ukimna. And we set up our Mishnah case, kishchayav modet. When the lova, the debtor, agrees that he owes the money, nevertheless, you can't give it back. Mushom shema katav levot b'nisan v'lo leval tishrei. The reason we don't allow him to give it back is because we worry about the dating on the contract. That the contract was written much earlier than the actual loan was drawn down. V'atir mitrif lukuchot b'nisan v'at tishrei. And then he will have the lien or have the right to collect encumbered property that pre-existed the loan that he extended shelo kedin improperly. V'lo amrin. And over there we don't say imkein malve gufe lo shavik. Over there we don't say, oh, the malve won't let it to happen because he knows that this document is not valid because it was predated. So he'll demand that the lovet gives him a proper document so that he doesn't get into trouble over here and lose his lien. Tov He says, we don't say that he says, oh, write a new document in Tishrei, the Dilma Shami Rabbanu Matzali, because maybe the Rabbanu will get wind of this and invalidate the loan. So why over there do we worry about the fact that the malvet will allow this to go through and then he'll have an earlier claim that he's entitled to? And he doesn't worry about the fact that he might be caught and lose his lien entirely. In our scenario, we worry about the fact that he would lose his lien, and he says, no way, write a new contract. What's the big difference? It's whether the malve gets anything out of it. So Amrei, hota mishum deit le'ravcho. Over there, he gets 6 months of extra lien protection. To katar v'luchot, minisan v'at tishrei. So minach naichilei, v'lo amar v'lo midei. In that case, he's willing to accept the risk that he might get caught, because he gains an extra 6 months of a lien. For him, that's worth it. Take the risk. Maybe the Rabbanim will find out. Maybe they won't find out. Meantime, I have a lien now that is 6 months earlier than I would have otherwise. So therefore, he doesn't speak up. Look, he wouldn't be the one to suggest doing this. But once the contract already exists, and the Lovez using this quote-unquote recycled contract, he's not going to bother him about it. But Hocha came to late Ravka. Over here, when he's recycling the contract on the same day, the Malva gets nothing out of this. If he was to rewrite the contract would be dated today. So he gets no extra lien or lien time period. To sof, shtara inaktiv. Because either way, the shtar is going to be written for today's date. By ika the gatarif lekuchot, the shtar shenimcha shibudot lo shavik. Now what is he going to do? He's going to be left the shtar that has a shibud that's not valid. He's not going to allow that to go through. So it depends on the malve's mindset. The malve's mindset is, if I have no gain, I'm not going to let the Lovest save some money and recycle the contract, because I'm the only one who stands to lose over here, and I have nothing to gain. In a situation in which he has the ability to gain, which is he gains 6 months of lien, over there we say that he would take the risk to use the recycled contract because he has what to gain. Obviously, there's balance. We say for one day, he wouldn't do it. For 6 months, he would do it. Question is, where's that threshold by which he's willing to take the risk? There is some threshold where he says it's worth the risk that the contract's invalid because I get a lot more lien time, versus a case where he says it's just too short a benefit for me to take that risk. We don't know where that difference is. We have a day and 6 months. Somewhere in between there, there is a threshold about which the malva feels comfortable about taking the risk and where he doesn't feel comfortable about taking the risk. Someone who makes a claim against an action of Beitin. As Rashi notes over here, what's Maisa Beitin? Davar Shutznai Beitin. Something that is an automatic condition of Beitin. For instance, he gives examples of this is ktuba, mazona isha. Meaning that even if a woman doesn't have a ktuba, there's a tzrai beitin that she's entitled to a ktuba and she gets her ktuba no matter what. So even if she can't produce a document that shows that she has a ktuba, she's entitled to collect a ktuba because that is a condition of beitin. Even if a ktuba doesn't say that the woman's entitled to mazon or mazonot, that is a tnai beitin that cannot be denied. And so in these cases, a person who says parati, who says I paid back or I discharged my obligation without a deem, he is not believed. The reason being is because, in this case, lo amar klum. Person who says I paid back my obligation, I paid the ktuba, I did whatever I was supposed to do, we don't believe him. My time a kol masa beitin kaman nokit shtar biyodei dami. Because any maisa beitin is the equivalent of the claimant holding a shtar in their hand. Because anytime the claimant shows up, beitin basically backs their claim up because it is a condition of beitin. So if the woman shows up and says, you owe me my ktuba, even though she can't produce a document, it's as if she's holding a document. So the guy says, parati, he says, I paid it back. The woman says, then why am I holding this document if you paid it back? Well, she's not holding a document. No, but it's not. Beitin gives her a right of claim as if she's holding the document. So unless he has evidence to the contrary, he can't deny the claim. She has a permanent claim against him, and the only way for him to deny that claim is either to have a receipt or to have a deed. But if he just simply comes in and says, parati, I paid it back, he has not believed in that case because she's still holding the shtar. Why is she holding the shtar if he paid it back? Amalei Rabbi Chia bar Abba, Rabbi Yochanan, velo mishnatenu hizu. He says, isn't that a mishnah? Rabbi Yochanan is saying this as if it's a memra of Rabbi Yochanan. So he says to Rabbi Yochanan, wait a minute, isn't this an explicit mishnah? Hotzia get ve'enimo ktuba. She pulls out a get and says, I was divorced, and there's no ktuba. Gova ktubata. She has a right to collect her ktuba. This is exactly Rabbi Yochanan's case, which is she shows evidence of a divorce, and that entitles her to ktuba. She doesn't have a ktuba document, yet we say that she's allowed to collect the ktuba. Why is that? Because it's as if she's holding a shtar ktuba in her hand, and she has a right of collection then against the husband, even though he claims parati. It doesn't help in that case. Amalei, ilav de delai lach chaspa, lo mishkachat marganita tuta. He said, had I not lifted up the shard of pottery, you wouldn't have found the diamond under it. So Rabbi Yochanan says, you all of a sudden are wise that there's a Mishnah like this. Had I not made the statement explaining you the halacha, you would never have looked at the Mishnah in this light. The only reason you're looking at the Mishnah in this light is because I provided you a din. And now you say, oh, that din? Oh, that's what makes sense. That's what's in the Mishnah. And you could suggest that the alternate explanation of the Mishnah is that this is a unique din in get and ktuba, but it's not a general din about maisa beitin. The fact that you're extrapolating it and extending it to prove everything about maisa beitin, that really derives from the fact that I made a statement, and then you're bringing a proof to that statement. Otherwise, you might have said, or you might have learned the Mishnah as meaning simply something that's unique to a ktuba. Now that you know my din, you're saying that it's a proof to all maisa beitin. So now, Amar Abaye, my marganita. What is the diamond that he found here? The diamond means that you explained the Mishnah in that manner, which means that there must have been an alternative explanation that he would have given had Rabbi Yochanan not stated his din. Had Rabbi Yochanan not said this is the halacha, then you would have explained this Mishnah in a different manner than the way that Rabbi Chia bar Abba is suggesting now to support Rabbi Yochanan. So Abaye says, is this really a proof or a marganita, a jewel that he found here? A precious stone? Is that the proper explanation of the Mishnah? There is an alternative explanation of the Mishnah. And that alternative explanation would not be supported of Rabbi Yochanan. And that is the following. So, Dilma Makom Shein Kotvim Ktuba Askinan. The Get Hainu Ktubata. Maybe that Mishnah is speaking about a case where it's a city where no women have Ktubot. In that city, the only way you get your Ktuba is if you show up with a Get. Your Get is evidence of the fact that you're entitled to a Ktuba. Ababa Makom Shein Kotvim Ktuba. But in a city where you do write a Ktuba, Inikita Ktuba Gavya, Ilo Lo Gavya. Maybe in a city where she is entitled to a ktuba, if she shows up with her ktuba, she gets paid. She doesn't show up with her ktuba, she won't get paid. I mean, that is the alternative view of what this Mishnah would have been saying. The Mishnah was talking about a case or a scenario where the woman doesn't have a ktuba. She lives in a city where she never gets a ktuba. That's what gives her the right to claim with the get. But had she lived in a city where you have a ktuba, this would not have been supported of Yochanan's position. So the explanation of the Mishnah to say that it's a case even where she's holding a ktuba and says it's lost or it's gone, she has a right of claim over here because of the Tznai Beitin, that's supported by Rabbi Yochanan because you have an alternate explanation. The fact that Rabbi Chiya bar Abba now says the explanation is like Rabbi Yochanan is why now that it's a diamond. The diamond that he found is that he explained the Mishnah in that following manner. Hadar Amar Abaye lav miltehi, de amrei, what I said is incorrect. And if you think that that case in the Mishnah is a case where they don't write ktubah at all, but in a city where they do write a ktubah, in a kita ktubah gavya, ilo lo gavya, then in a situation where she has a ktubah, she has a right to claim, but she doesn't have a ktubah, she has no right to claim, almanam min erusim b'may gavya. A widow from erusin, what does she have a right to make a claim with? Be'ede mitad bal, lit'on. So then she'll say that she has witnesses to the fact that her husband passed away. Liton v'lema paratia. The Yitomim can make a claim that it was paid back already. If they do that, they're believed because she has no document evidencing the fact that she's owed the money. The problem is, this is mina erusin. And there is no ktubah mina erusin. Or, we don't write a ktubah for the erusin, we only write the ktubah once we get to the nisuin. So even though she's entitled to the ktubah because she was married through erusin, she's entitled to Meya or Matayim, but she has no evidence of that fact. That's going to put her in the position where she won't be able to make a claim, and other parties are going to make a claim of payment, and she won't have any evidence to the contrary. And if you say that is the case, then the Takanat Chachamim, that an Almanah from the Yerusin is entitled to a Ketubah, how is she ever going to make a claim? Anytime she makes a claim, the Yitomim will say, maybe my father paid it back. Once they say that, she has no claim because she has no evidence. She has no shtar in her hand. She doesn't have a shtar because they don't write a shtar. But the fact is that you're telling me the only way to collect on a ketubah is to have a physical ketubah. Then how is she going to collect? Ella, what it must be is she has a right of collection even without a ketubah. It's a tznai beitin. And once you have a tznai beitin, you don't have a right to say paratia. You don't have the right to say it was paid back. Since you don't have a right to say it's paid back, she's as if she's holding a shtar the whole time, unless you have evidence to the contrary. You need a dim, you need a shover, you need something to show us that it was paid back, and that's what gives her the right of claim. And that would help, because then nobody can just make a claim that it was paid back, or that you told me, you can't say, maybe my father paid it back, and now all of a sudden she's in a bind, because she has no evidence to prove that she has a ktubah, and she also has no way to prove that she wasn't paid back. So once Abaye denies the fact that his alternative explanation, the Mishnah, is correct, then you're left with that one explanation of the Mishnah, which is supported by Rabbi Yochanan and Ein Ochanami. He found a precious stone. He found a Mishnah that supported Rabbi Yochanan. But again, Rabbi Yochanan said the only reason you saw that or you came to that conclusion from the Mishnah is because you knew the halacha. You're using the information that I gave you then to take a view or perspective on the Mishnah that gives you the same din, that the Mishnah is supportive of what I said. Had I not said it to you, you would not have read the Mishnah that way, or you wouldn't even have thought of that Mishnah as coming to that conclusion. So, Amalei Mark Shisha Brei de Rav Chisda Rav Ashi, V'amana min erusim di la ketubah min olan. How do you know that that's the case? We had a statement of fact, which is that an amana from an erusin is entitled to a ketubah. Where do you know that? Where's the evidence to that fact? We know that she doesn't have a document of ketubah, because ketubah is not written until he nisuin. But how do we know that she's entitled to the conditions or the payments of a ketubah? Now, the nature of the question for the Balei Tosafot is a little difficult, because the Balei Tosafot in many places in Shas say that it's clear that an arusa is entitled to a ketubah. And that is part of the Takanat Chachamim. So then, what's the nature of the question here in the Gemara if we know that an arusa is entitled to a ketubah? So Tosafot over here makes a claim, he does this in other places in Shas with regards to other issues, and says that the Gemara knows that that is the case. They just don't want to rely on statements of Amoraim. We know from other Amoraim, we know from statements in the Gemara that that is the case. What they're looking for down here is Tanaic evidence to the fact. They want a Mishnah and a Braita that's supportive of those Memrot of Amoraim, or that which we know which is true, that the Amanah is entitled to a Ketubah. We want Tanaic evidence to that fact to back up the statements of the Amoraim. And that's what Tosafot says here is the nature of the question. It's not questioning the underlying assumption that she's entitled to it. They just want a higher threshold of proof to that fact. Or Tosafot says the nature of the question over here is a difference between grusha and almana, which is that the Gemara is certain about a grusha that she has a right of collection and has a right to a ketubah because she has a ket with which to collect her ketubah, because that's evidence of the fact that she was married and is entitled to a ketubah. The problem for the almana is that she doesn't have any documented evidence. She has to get a deem to the fact that her husband passed away, and a deem may not suffice for her to then not have the, you told me, make a claim of Shema Peratich. Maybe our father paid you back. And therefore, is it deemed to be a ma'aseh beitin for an almanah as well? And that's what the Gemara is searching for over here, to find that it is a ma'aseh beitin that does not have a claim of paratia against it. And that's why the almanah is entitled to that. The Gemara is not asking about a grusha, but only about an almanah. If you look in the Ran, he says explicitly, that's the nature of the question over here, that the Gemara knows by a grusha that she's entitled to a ketubah. The Gemara is trying to actually find out if an almanah is entitled to a ketubah as well. So one step higher than Tosafot, not an assumption of ketubah, but a question of whether there is a ketubah for an almanah, not a grusha, and he'll separate the cases in Shas where we know that she gets, and Arusa gets a ketubah as cases of divorce. And this case where they're asking about is a case of an almanah. Tosafot assumes both of them are ketubah. The question is, what's the tokef, what's the strength of the takanat chachamim? And that's actually what the Ritva says. The question is over here, the nature of the question is this a full ma'aseh beitin, where she has all the trappings of a tnai beitin for a ketubah for an almanah or grusha min erusin? Or is this simply a minhag, or a thing that beitin established without all the trappings or strength of a regular ma'aseh beitin? And so that's what the Ritva actually says is the nature of the question over here. But the Rishonim are struggling with the fact that many Rishonim believe that an Arusa is entitled to a ketubah, and that's obvious from other places in Shas, so you have to then reconcile why is the Gemara asking the question over here. So we saw the answer of the Balei Tosfot, the Ran, the Ritva. There are other Rishonim who really believe that there is no evidence to that fact in other places in Shas, and the answer in each case, why that's not a proof, and therefore this is a statement of the Gemara, a real question of the Gemara as to is an almanah or grusha min erusin entitled to a ketubah because it's not a certain fact or it's not obvious from other places in Shas. So Yilema Mehadetnan, if you think it's from this Mishnah, Nit Armela O Nit Garsha Ben Min Erusim Ben Min Nisuin, she was divorced or widowed, whether it's from the point of kiddushin, halachic engagement, or from the consummation of the marriage, Govat Akol, she collects everything. Dilma Eichik Dekotavla. Maybe that's only when he actually wrote the ketubah. I mean that she's not entitled unless she actually has a physical ketubah. V'chi Teima Maila Memra. So then you tell me if she has a ketubah, what's the question that she can collect on the ketubah? I mean if she's holding a document, the husband gave her a ketubah, what's the chiddush that she collects on the ketubah? V'afuke Mid Rabbi Elazar Ben Azariah. That would be to exclude the position or deny the position of Rabbi Elazar Ben Azariah. Demar Shelo Kotavla Elamanat Lekonsa. When he writes a ketubah, even at the time of Erusin, it's with a built-in condition that we consummate the marriage. Without consummation of the marriage, the ketubah would not be effective. That's what Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says. So what we're coming along to say is, no, that's not the case. So it's trichalai, that's what we need it for. To teach you that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is wrong, and if she's holding a document of a ketubah, then she has a right of collection. Dekanami, that makes sense. Dektani govat hakol. Because in that Mishnah it says she collects everything. Imar Bishlama the Kot of Law, if it's a case where he wrote her a ketubah, I know the Katani Govata Kol. That's why she's entitled to collect the entire amount. Eliyamar to Low Kot of Law, you say that there's no ketubah over here. My Govata Kol. What is she collecting? Everything. What everything is there to collect? There's only one thing to collect if you have no ketubah. That's Tznai Beitin. Tznai Beitin is if you get 100 for an almanah, 200 for a ketubah. There's no Tosefet Ketubata. Tosefet Ketubata is only when you have a written ketubah that evidences the fact. When you say govat a kol seems to mean or imply beyond the base amount of the ketubah she's collecting. The only way she's collecting beyond the base amount is if she has a physical ketubah. If we're relying on the tznai beitin, then manel matayim hu da'itla. That's all that she has. She only has a right to 100 or 200. She does not have a right to any more than that, and therefore the statement of govat a kol would be inappropriate. So you're right. That Mishnah must be talking about a case where she has a physical ketubah. And that's why she's making a claim. It's not a proof to the fact that an Arusa is entitled to a ketubah, even if she doesn't have a ketubah. All right, we'll stop here on the second line on the top of Yud Chet Amud Aleph and work on tomorrow finding the proof as to how we know that an almanah from the Arusin is entitled to a ketubah, even if she's not holding the ketubah document.